There are too many rumors to ignore now. DeAndre Ayton's name and the Indiana Pacers keep being connected. What do the Pacers want? What do the Suns want? What does DeAndre Ayton want? How does the Brooklyn Nets play into all this? We'll break it all down today on a crossover Locked On Pacers and Locked On Suns podcast.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Everybody, welcome in to a crossover Locked On podcast edition of the DeAndre Ayton saga. I'm Tony East, the host of Locked On Pacers. He's Brendan Kleen, the host of Locked On Suns, and the rumors are swirling. Everybody, ESPN's Brian Windhorst, Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report, Mark Stein of Mark Stein Substack have all now connected DeAndre Ayton to the Pacers via various methods, a sign and trade, an offer sheet. There's a lot of variables at play, including a Pacers trade up in the air, the Brooklyn Nets. And we got to cut through all this and figure out what's really going on and what the motivations are for every party. Brendan, are you sick of the word rumors yet? Are you trying to get through this? Restricted free agency makes this all very complicated.
Restricted free agency combined with a trade offer, or a trade request, rather. I would take it over the years and years, the summers that I had, just counting down days to the draft while the Suns toiled in awfulness. But yes, it is getting pretty exhausting. I can't lie that I was pretty excited to just hear that Brogdon is about to take his physical. It seems like the Pacers are on the precipice of actually having cap space, and we can probably have some peace on this situation here soon. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah, that is part of the delay for those who were not on the internet today. The Pacers made a trade with the Celtics. Malcolm Brogdon went to Boston. That freed up some cap space for the Pacers, getting them closer to max space. So the trade's official, meaning it's been called into the league, but it's not complete, which is different. So the space isn't freed up. The Pacers can't use the resources until Brogdon accomplishes a physical in Boston. But that doesn't really matter too much in the sake of the grand scheme of things. That is going to happen almost certainly. And then it becomes a game of what's going to happen with DeAndre Ayton. Numerous insiders have connected him to the Pacers in this situation. Miles Turner's name's involved. Kevin Durant's name's involved. Cap space was floating around like crazy. And I think the important place to start here when cutting through this is who has the leverage, because that is what's ultimately going to decide how this goes. If the Suns had all the leverage, they could get what they wanted from the Pacers or the Nets if they were involved. If the Nets had the leverage and that's where Ayton wanted to go, then they could, you know, make this process go at their speed. If the Pacers somehow, if he was an unrestricted free agent, they would have the leverage. But I think, and Brendan, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the restricted free agent who can pick his next team and is at an impasse with his prior team has most of the leverage in this situation. That's DeAndre Ayton.
Obviously, in terms of fate and choice and those types of things, I have to agree with you. I think DeAndre Ayton being able to chart his own course innately gives him the leverage. Obviously, the Suns have a little bit here too, in that despite everything we've come to believe that they're not interested in bringing this guy back, they do officially hold the ability to bring him back by way of restricted free agency. So they have that leverage too, in terms of where he ultimately ends up. But yeah, whether DeAndre Ayton chooses to sign that offer sheet with the Pacers is solely up to him. And I think, frankly, I don't know how much this plays into leverage. It might give him a little bit less in the grand scheme of things, but he doesn't have a lot of other options. And so I do think if this is real, if it is a full maximum offer, I think DeAndre Ayton will probably take it, and he can force the Suns' hands on some of this KD stuff. He can force the Suns' hands if they want to try to desperately negotiate a sign and trade. But I'll offer you this too, Tony, because it's something that I've been thinking about a lot. I don't exactly know where how to make sense of it, but I feel like Bill Duffy is another character in this that has a fair amount of leverage that we should probably talk about, because he represents both DeAndre Ayton and Miles Turner, and it kind of feels like he's trying to do two things at once here. It feels like he's trying to get DeAndre Ayton the max that he promised DeAndre Ayton in all likelihood, while also trying to arrange a future for his other client, Miles Turner, that is desirable to Miles. So I can't help but wonder if that's part of why there's been a delay here, of both of those things needing to be satisfied, and only one of them maybe right now being satisfied, which is Ayton getting his money.
Yeah, Bill Duffy, a big character here. It's interesting because he's probably the only one who knows like perfectly what every team wants.
Yeah, did you get him? Can we get him on the show? Can he be the guest for segment two?
That would be quite dramatic and fascinating in this situation. Then suddenly we would have the leverage, Brendan, if you believe that. So the reason I pin more of it on Ayton is because of Kevin Durant, ironically. Like, if he wanted to go to Brooklyn, he could drag this out forever, which would hold the Suns in a holding pattern, the Nets in a holding pattern. I guess Utah's kind of involved in this, but not really. The Pacers, who have 26-point-something million of cap room if they wanted, like, they'd all just be waiting for him to make a decision if he had interest in the Nets, right? So that's why I think he has the leverage, because he does have more than one option technically available to him. If he is intent on signing an offer sheet with the Pacers, that's where this discussion becomes to what it is of, is this becoming a sign-and-trade? Do the Suns just match it because they don't want to lose him and they'll just deal with it in a year? Do they not want to match it and then they're just stuck? You know, there's a lot of game of chicken that restricted free agency ends up being. And we can't even play the game yet because the Pacers don't have maximum cap space at this time, which is another hurdle to talk about, is they have to trade someone like Goga Batadze to clear the room, or Daniel Tice, or TJ McConnell, or something, if they even wanted to do that, right? And so the fact that that hasn't happened yet also suggests maybe this isn't like an imminent thing. But, you know, until we hear that, okay, maybe the Nets stuff is speeding up, or the Pacers have cleared the space, for example, it either has to be a sign and trade, and then there's no one with leverage. They all have to communicate, unless the Nets are involved, or we're just going to be waiting until the Pacers can clear max space.
Yeah, let me ask you this then, because if all of this is predicated on the Pacers actually having the cap space to make an offer sheet, if that's where the threat is coming from, that's going to make the Suns act, or it's going to spur these KD talks along, or it's going to do this or that in terms of the domino effect, do the Pacers actually have players that they would want to get rid of to clear that cap space? Like, is that a legitimate threat of them cutting players or getting off of salary without getting a lot back just to do this? Is that a credible threat that the Suns should be afraid of? Or does that maybe explain why we've heard so much, in addition to the offer sheet possibility, of having the sign-and-trade possibility? Because that would allow them to keep everybody, still right, get Ayton, and then maybe you don't have to give a ton back because, again, Ayton and the Pacers are really in the driver's seat here. But you at least give something up to make the deal work, and then you get everything. You kind of have your cake and eat it too if you're the Pacers, rather than, I mean, I look at the bottom of the roster, I know that they've guaranteed some of these guys, they've made the decision to bring back some of these guys. It doesn't look like there's a lot of like flotsam out there, and I guess unless it's the guys that they got back from the Celtics.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because if he wants the max, they have to clear the space, but then if the Suns match, they dump somebody for nothing, right? So that, another game of chicken. We got to title this episode Games of Chicken. Will they Ayton sign with the Pacers? Because, like, but I'm going to name the names that I think make the most sense. These are not the only names that could be moved, in theory. Goga Batadze makes basically exactly enough that if they got off him, they would have about $300,000 over max space if they got no salary in return. He's young, and the Pacers have a dozen players under 25 on their roster now, right? They're trying to be young, so maybe they don't want to do that. But that is one that makes sense to me as like a neutral value could potentially pawn him off. A Euro big man who's young and talented. Hey, what's Greg Popovich doing? Could they just make that call? And then the other one is Daniel Tice, who is 30 and would, if Ayton is involved, be the backup to Ayton and Isaiah Jackson. And as Suns fans know, except not really, Jalen Smith, because he was a totally different player after being traded. He wouldn't even play. So he's the other one, but he requires like a big trade exception. I think I wrote this down earlier today. Four teams have a big enough trade exception, but one of them is Denver, who is like not going to pay the tax for Daniel Tice. So there's not that many options for him. But those are the two guys that maybe they could sniff around clearing the space to get Ayton. But then, right, like we just said, if they end up dumping one of these guys and it takes an asset to do it, and then the Suns match, they have now given stuff up for nothing in return. So they have to know the Suns' intentions, and they never can unless Bill Duffy is helping Ayton quite a bit.
Yeah, we're back to Bill Duffy, and I think in that way it's something where it actually can serve both of his clients well in this situation, that he is in both camps a little bit and can try to satisfy both. I mean, I guess what we're coming around on here, Tony, is that we're explaining why it's taking a little while, right? I mean, yeah, I understand the Brogdon thing needed to become official, and, you know, whatever direction this goes, it's not going to be an easy decision, whether you're talking about cutting salary or doing the dare, the game of chicken, like you were saying, of signing me. Like, none of these things are easy decisions, but it's lasted a little bit longer than I think people really expected, at least to hear something. We haven't even heard the inklings of, okay, if it was a sign and trade, what would the deal look like? Is it a full max? If it's an offer sheet, we don't know any of these things. And I think this is explaining why is the pieces are sort of falling into place, but not perfectly. And I think that's why you're seeing this drag out, not to mention the Nets and the Lakers of all of it.
The other factor you mentioned, Brogdon, that I think is actually a Pacers factor that's in the Suns' favor relates to Malcolm Brogdon and his old restricted free agency and how the Pacers acquired him. And I would like to explain that, because I think a lot of people who follow the Suns and not the Pacers don't really know that part of the story. But before we explain that, I just killed that tease. I got to tell you guys all about Built Bar, who are making the best tasting protein bars ever. They basically taste like candy bars, but they're protein bars, 100% covered in chocolate, soft, delicate, easy to chew, full of flavor protein bars. Their newest flavor is coconut brownie chunk. So it's got coconut flavor, brownie flavor, and it's got these puff marshmallow things in them. They're super, super good. You've got to try them. And what makes Built Bar awesome, besides that they're delicious, is they're good for you. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and all delicious. My favorite is the peanut butter brownie. Brendan, do you have a favorite flavor of Built Bar?
I'm an old school guy. I like the double chocolate. I like the rich. I mean, they all taste great, but double chocolate. I got to go with it.
All of them are made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more effectively. So good for you, effective, efficient, all these basketball words that you've got to try. And if you want to try them yourself, they have a ton of flavors right on their website. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCK15 when you check out. You'll get 15% off your order, and you can do it every time you check out. That promo code again is LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. Welcome back into Locked On Suns or Locked On Pacers. Thanks for making either of us your first listen every day. For your second listen, just switch shows. Just go to the other one. You'll hear a lot of similar topics with DeAndre Ayton swirling the news this week. So here's a big factor in the Suns' favor to me, Brendan. The Pacers owner, Herb Simon, thinks restricted free agency is not a fair thing. And so when the Pacers got Malcolm Brogdon in the summer of 2019, they had the cap space to sign him outright. The Bucks were in the tax. They were probably not going to match him at 4 for $84. And still, the Pacers sent the Bucks a first-round pick and 2 second-round picks to sign and trade for Brogdon, because Herb Simon and Kevin Pritchard admitted this in the presser introducing Brogdon. He said this deal does not get done without Herb Simon's involvement. He steps in and he trades a first and 2 seconds to the Bucks, and the Pacers get Brogdon. They were happy, but they probably could have got him without the offer. So that is something I think, unless Herb Simon has changed his ways, and that's possible. The Pacers are currently rebuilding for the first time in 3 decades. This is not an owner who likes to tear his team down. But if he still has the same thoughts about restricted free agency, it's very possible he is at least thinking, okay, this needs to be a sign and trade so the Suns don't get totally screwed in this process. And then the cap space argument doesn't really matter as much, because it would just go straight to negotiations.
Yeah, and I've been reminding my audience of that a little bit. I didn't, you know it. Why did he not want to go that route? Was it the waiting game of the offer sheet and everything else? Or is it just like, I don't want to bully my comrades in Milwaukee?
Exactly. The latter. I do not want to, I don't know his exact wording or thinking, but basically as it was summarized by Windhorse when he reported it, and then the Pacers when they described it, is like, they don't want it to be like an unfair thing to other ownership, basically.
Well, coming from Phoenix, there's a lot worse things an owner could do, but we'll leave it at that. I think it's fascinating. And I think the other part of this that I've been reminding my audience about from an Indiana perspective is their hesitancy to give out genuine maxes. And I think that's a big part of this too. And I've actually had some Pacers folks pop up in the YouTube comments on my shows too, being like, yes, this is real. And I guess I just wonder, like, you said it yourself just in that setup of the Pacers finally embracing somewhat of a reset here. That's the part that I haven't been able to wrap my head around. The idea that they didn't give a max to Oladipo or to Sabonis, and yet they're going to give it to this guy who isn't humongously proven at a time when they're supposed to be sort of resetting their team. I mean, I understand he fits age-wise with their, you know, younger core, Haliburton, Mathurin. He's only in his mid-20s now, Ayton, but that's the part that's confused me. It's like, yes, they have the cap space, obviously, but that doesn't always mean that they're interested. A lot of other teams had cap space and just passed on Ayton. The Spurs aren't out here making an offer because they're doing the same thing. They don't need a DeAndre Ayton at a max salary at a time when they're basically trying to lose games. So what do you think it is about Ayton that the Pacers are intrigued by right now? And do you buy that they really are interested in him at that full max price?
I think they are interested in him. Over $30 million a year for 4 years is a lot of bones. And like Brogdon getting 4 for 84, like, was a lot for the Pacers, right? And the report has been that they offered Depot $100 million. You know, like that is a big sum from the Pacers' perspective. They don't offer those sort of things. And the other thing about it is that I've kind of hinted at in terms of an expensive roster at some point is next summer, Tyrese Haliburton's up for rookie extension. Like, he's going to get easily $100 million. Even if he doesn't get a max, he's getting over $100 million. So, like, you know, is an owner who doesn't like restricted free agency and hasn't really ponied up paying that kind of cash 2 summers in a row, and if they have Ayton and Haliburton and Nesmith and Jalen Smith, they'll have the entire 2020 draft. All these guys will get expensive eventually. Like, they can't just do this forever. So that's where the full max part is very interesting to me, and why a sign and trade that cuts away some money could be an interesting factor to this as well. And the negotiation part, especially, again, we're back to Bill Duffy. Bill Duffy, if you're listening, thank you for being a main character on this show, where he's interesting because Turner seems like a very natural fit in this kind of thing. But who knows exactly what a deal would look like?
I mean, it works straight up.
It does.
Salary wise.
Is your compensation is confusing, but Turner still works, which is fascinating in this.
The way to figure out base your compensation is go to tradenba.com and start messing around until it works. You have to do the thing where you sign Ayton to a new contract within the little software, but once you do that, it'll tell you if it works. That's my hack for any listeners who want to mess around with it. But yeah, because of the rules there where Ayton counts for half of his salary for trade purposes, Turner's is close enough that you split the difference in it and it works out. It's legal. So maybe it is as simple as that. Maybe it's, you know, Turner and a pick has been something like a lottery protected future first, not super valuable type of pick, something maybe even that it turns into a couple of second round picks. We see that type of thing a lot with the protections. It would at least give the Suns something. It would probably be redirected promptly to Brooklyn, but I think we could probably see something like that. The thing that I've been asking you on that note is, you know, can they play Ayton and Turner together? Obviously not. We saw that, and I would imagine it's a topic you've covered ad nauseum of the two big situation that they just got out of. And then if they're not going to do that, okay, well then they need to trade Turner, and that becomes pretty obvious as you're negotiating back and forth and we're talking about leverage. That creates a situation where Turner becomes an obvious guy that needs to be moved, and the Pacers probably lose a little bit of leverage in whatever negotiations they would be trying to explore there. I don't know. There's so many ripple effects there, and it's like, okay, well, is this the best that the Pacers could do for Turner? Probably not, but what else is out there? Why hasn't a deal happened already? If there was a better one, these are all things you and I have been messaging about, and I don't have great answers for any of them.
I'm just going to steal all your listeners when the Pacers start Jalen Smith and DeAndre Ayton together in the front court next season.
It hit me about a week ago, and I was like, you just have to sit back and laugh if that happens as a Suns fan. DeAndre Ayton maxed out, Jalen Smith on a nice second contract, a starting front court. Probably wouldn't be bad. I don't know. I still don't fully love the fit. I mean, that's pretty clear, but it would be pretty funny. It would be pretty funny.
There are a lot of crossovers between those teams. Aaron Holiday played in Phoenix last year. Torrey Craig has played on both teams twice for the Suns in the last couple years. Randomly, two teams with a lot of intersection. Front offices are close, which could matter here. The thing for me with the sign and trade that I've said is, you know, it's all about Simon to me, because the least resistance route for the Pacers, we're about to talk about Chicken again, everybody. If you're sick of that, I apologize. The path of least resistance for the Pacers is throw Goga to somebody and just sign him. And then why would you sign and trade, right? Why would you give up stuff? You could trade Turner separately and get value that way. But like you said, right, everybody's going to know at that point you're trying to deal him. It's like, remember when the Warriors had to dump Andrew Bogut to get KD in the summer of 2017? And the whole league knew, right? And Bogut was definitely a positive value guy at that point. But they just gave him to the Mavs. They got nothing in return because everybody knew, like, and the Mavs were happy to get a good player for free, basically. But you know, that was a similar-ish, I suppose, a little more extreme. Although, ironically, still involving Kevin Durant situation from a half decade ago. So that is another part of the Chicken game. Are the Pacers wanting to do the cap space route and then having to trade Turner somewhere else, but then they risk not getting him, like we already talked about. So perhaps it is something like that. Turner with maybe a pick from the Celtics that can become official in mere hours, for example. We know the Nets love Celtics picks, so perhaps that is the the easy route to make something like that, for example. And again, I would be hesitant as the Pacers to, like, if Ayton already says to the Suns, like, I'm signing a max with them and the Suns aren't matching, if I'm the Pacers, I'm like, I'm not including any picks. But again, the Suns could just match. So you have to find that medium. It's very hard because in the order, in the tier list of leverage, it's Ayton, Suns, Pacers. So that's why sign and trade negotiations will likely happen before offer sheet discussions, I think, even though I still think the Pacers' easiest route is clear space and then sign them. Brendan, how do the Nets fit into this? You know more about that perspective than I do, because I don't have to deal with Kevin Durant trade talks on the Pacers' front.
I believe more and more at this point that the Nets genuinely are not interested in DeAndre Ayton. They came out and said that, or leaked it right away when KD requested a trade. And I didn't buy it. I thought it was posturing. It's saying, hey, the best player on the team that our guy just said he wants to be in, we don't want him. And that's pretty obvious. That seems like a smart thing to do if you're Sean Marks, the GM of the Nets. But the more time passes and the more we hear pretty concrete rumors of what's being offered or what could be offered or what's being talked about, and it doesn't include DeAndre Ayton, and then you add in that the Suns seem at least content to talk to Indiana about signing trades and things like that instead of dealing with the Nets, I buy that the Nets just genuinely aren't interested in getting DeAndre Ayton at the price that he would come in at. We can quibble about if that's smart. I don't know. I think he doesn't fit with Ben Simmons, but I don't know if building around Ben Simmons is like plan A for them either. It's a little bit peculiar to me that they wouldn't want him, but I believe it at this point. So you start to get into tons of questions beyond that. Can what, like I said previously, can what comes back from Indiana be part of what goes to Brooklyn if you're the Suns? Can you get Utah involved, which is something you mentioned? We heard a week ago or so that the Jazz had interest in Ayton, and it started to be, okay, well, is Donovan Mitchell going to become part of this? I think that may be the Suns' dream. I don't know how likely that is. So the answer is it's really connected to the KD talks, but I don't exactly know how, and I don't know if the Suns can pull all of this off and catch all of the balls that are being juggled in a way that makes sense. I'm losing track of it. I'm going crazy, Tony, is the answer. I don't know how all of these things are ultimately going to play out together, but they obviously are interconnected.
Yeah, the Nets being connected to a negotiation between the Pacers and Suns is interesting, and I think you nailed the first part. Like, they had every reason to say we have no interest in Ayton. And, you know, Windhorst, the talk of the offseason with his finger thing, but he has said something last week, I think it was on Hoop Collective, that I thought was crucial when this Ayton stuff started, and that's that everything is negotiations at this point. Like, everything is a negotiating tactic that's being floated. And so maybe the Pacers' involvement is just that. Like, hey, Nets, let's go. Let's get some speed on this. And I don't think that's true. I think there's more to it than that. But, you know, everything is a tactic at this point. And that's another part of why I think the Nets play into this, is, like, the Nets are hoping that Ayton and the Pacers come to a verbal agreement and no offer sheet is signed, because then this can become a three-team deal, or more stuff can swap around that might be more appealing to them, or allow the Suns to just move it into the KD stuff and not have to deal with you know, waiting 90 days to trade Turner, for example, or something like that. So they are definitely a factor because they are interested in what the Suns do, but they also are like, okay, he's a plus value player. Maybe we can get in the shuffle here. So because of Kevin Durant, obviously, he's the reason that Ayton probably hasn't signed already anyway. But because of that in general, I think that there's another team with motivation, and I'm sure Bill Duffy knows that as well, that makes this an interesting game of, okay, do we want to actually put pen to paper or anything, or do we just want to agree and then work all that stuff out, like we talked about with sign-in trades, for example, at a later date?
Yeah, I'm not sure if Miles Turner is going to be the difference in a KD negotiation, mostly because it's an expiring contract.
Yeah, I don't think he would be.
So to me, it's the pick. If the Suns get a pick, you know, I mapped a lot of this out ad nauseum on my show, so Suns listeners will be familiar, but it sounds like right now they are doing a pretty insulting dance of, can we get Kevin Durant while giving up neither of, well, they might give up DeAndre Ayton anyway, as we're talking about here, but without trading Ayton in the deal or Mikal Bridges in the deal, and just do picks and have the best player be Cam Johnson. Now, I am very dubious that that is a realistic thing to do, but if you read the tea leaves coming out of Phoenix, that seems to be where they are right now, is not only Cam Johnson as the player centerpiece, but not even the full four picks and three swaps package that they can offer. Ryan Windhorst had that this week, that he said nobody is actually offering that full legally allowed package of picks that the CBA gives you the permission to send out. So if we assume, okay, eventually they're going to get to that full pick artillery that they're going to give out, could this Pacers pick be a fifth that they trade? And does that get them over the hump? Does that get them closer to their dream of only giving up Cam Johnson? If it's Cam Johnson, a bunch of salary, five picks and three swaps, is that still the best offer and Brooklyn eventually has to take it? Or could you maybe, if it is going to be Mikal Bridges, have the Pacers pick be one of maybe less than four? That you're, maybe if you give up two picks and two swaps and this Pacers pick is one of them and that stems the bleeding from the Suns standpoint. There's all these constructions, but I think that that pick is really where it goes. But I have a question for you. From the Pacers side of it, something I've been wondering about, there's a lot to get over emotionally between the Suns and DeAndre Ayton. I mean, everybody saw the outburst in Game 7 on both Monty and Ayton's side. There's been a long history of a lack of commitment to Ayton. But part of me's been wondering, and you mentioned it a little bit there, of if this was leaked or built up in a way that wasn't fully truthful. What if the Suns just are going to keep him anyway? After all of this, I wonder if that's a possibility. And I think it's especially a possibility if the Pacers do not give him the full max. I think that's the trump card. If the Pacers just put on the table 4 years full max, starting at $30.5 million and going from there, I don't think the Suns match. But if it's anything less, I truly think that that could still be on the table. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, and he'd be, even if he like is so pouty that he sits out a year, that's okay. You got a 25-year-old good player at 3 for 90 at that point. Like, that's a tradable thing. So the Suns are probably like, all right, we'll just keep it or whatever his deal would be if he doesn't quite get full max. And yeah, you know, a lot of these things, when teams actually try to pry a restricted free agent away, you hear like 4 year max, 15% trade kicker, player option, we're going to delay the physical like crazy, you know, all the crap that makes it so annoying to match and so painful. Like Allen Crabbe got that because the Nets wanted to steal him from Portland so bad a few years ago. If you really want a restricted free agent, you can make it hell for the other team. And so, I mean, like you said, I don't know that the Suns would match a 4 year max. In fact, if they would, we wouldn't even be having this discussion, right? They would just have him back. But if the Pacers really want to do something damaging or make it a discussion, they would do something like that, which would be more painful for them. But again, then they maybe don't have to go the sign and trade route. What's more painful for them? How do they navigate this sort of thing? So in terms of what the Suns would match, and again, Bill Duffy, a key character here, I think the Pacers would probably know. And I think if you see something like random in the next 2 days that says the Pacers have traded Daniel Tice to the Clippers or Goga Batadze to the Spurs, you should probably go, oh my gosh, okay, you know, sound the alarms. We're getting to the point where this could be happening, because then they'd have a probably, they wouldn't do that without a pretty good idea they'd get Ayton. But the Suns still hold the cards, and that's why that's fascinating.
And that's what I mean about this thing dragging out, is we haven't seen that move, or we haven't seen the rumors of that move. And I've been saying this about the KD stuff, too. It's like we haven't heard the, well, today, this week we finally got it, the Donovan Mitchell might be available stuff. Or we haven't heard, is Ben Simmons being shopped around, which would solve a lot of the Nets' problems with all this max extension, rookie max extension stuff. So that's what's been so eerie about this whole situation, is that it just has felt like a complete standstill. None of those little moves, none of those little rumors have been going around. But can we end on predictions? What do you think happens here? Because it might happen like hours after we post this, so we might as well just get on the record with it.
Yeah, it's to your point about the reporting, it's just felt like so direct. You know what I mean? For something that should be complicated, like this is a former number one pick, but potentially signing a deal worth $130 million. That's very complicated, and all the reporting has been very direct. Pacers interest, offer sheet, like none of the other pieces that are involved, the Nets, all these other players we've talked about, have been talked about like at all. Like outside of the Pacers moving back Dwayne Washington's guarantee date, they've had like no hint of anything weird going on in their side. So the only thing I want to add to that I'm going to use to kind of go into my prediction is the Pacers would have max cap space right now as we speak, if they did not already sign Jalen Smith. They obviously know that. This is their jobs.
And that's official, you know what I mean? Yes.
He's official. He signed on July 6th in the Pacers facilities. They knew that would take them away from max space, right? They had to have known. They obviously knew. I'm not going to pretend like they didn't know. And that makes me think that an outright signing seems like a little less likely, because if they had any idea that they could just sign him outright, why would they sign Jalen Smith immediately when they could just reorder those operations and still have a similar result and not be waiting at this point to dump something else? And they still would have had to do something to sign Jalen Smith to the deal they did later, but they would have Ayton and not have to deal with it. So that's why even though I think it still makes sense for the Pacers to try to pursue dumping some salary and just signing him outright, I think it's going to, and the Herb Simon factor makes me think it's probably going to end with a sign and trade, but I have a lot of trouble nailing down the exact value.
Well, because it doesn't need to be value going back. It's hard to guess what it will be, right? That's right. What's so weird. That's, you wouldn't have guessed Malcolm Brogdon was worth what he ended up being worth. I think in a lot of cases, sign and trades feel pretty random. It's hard to necessarily assign, well, why did X get sent out for X player? Lauri Markkanen, Lonzo Ball. We've seen more and more sign and trades, but it doesn't always match up why one team felt obligated to give up as little or as much as they did. I mean, it's all over the place. But I just can't help but think, I mean, Miles fits everywhere, pretty much, to me. I mean, he's a good player. He does good things on both ends of the floor. So whether he eventually goes to Brooklyn or Phoenix, I just feel like it's too obvious that he should be part of this. Maybe that's wrong, but I just think this is the best opportunity for him. It's the best opportunity for Bill Duffy, his agent, to get him to a good place. It's probably the best chance for the Pacers. I do just think his already questionable market would just get depleted. We can quibble on that. But so I think it would be centered on Ayton for Turner. And yeah, I mean, I'm coming down on the end of it's going to be Turner and one of those weird picks that gets protected a million years into the future and then either becomes less protected over time or maybe eventually becomes a couple of second round picks or something like that. And then that just gets sent to the Nets for Durant. That's kind of where I am. I don't buy that they're going to give up Duarte or any real talent. No. They don't need to do any of that. That would be crazy to me. But a pick that's not very valuable, a long way in the future, that seems like enough to get the job done. That's my best guess. But again, it's been so hard to read all this.
It wouldn't be the NBA or a big trade without it being like, okay, if it's 1 through 12, it goes to the Celtics. If it's 12 through 20,
the Zach Lowe tweet 10 minutes afterward where it's like, hey, here's a big wall of text. Read up. This is what's going on with the
Here's
pick.
The protection. And I love that stuff, so I'm glad he gets it. But it's always like, wow, okay. They were really negotiating this one. So there are a lot of Pacers. Like, I still think, as I've said on my own show, I think the smartest thing the Pacers would do is clear the salary and just sign him. And if it gets matched, whatever. You know, Tyson, Gogo aren't like so valuable to me that you'd really be mad at yourself, although you'd be a little disappointed. But the most likely outcome, given the Jalen Smith timing, given the ownership factor, given the Nets factor, given that Ayton is the guy with the leverage, does sort of seem like it could be headed to a sign and trade. Do you have anything else to add, or have we, in 35 minutes, my goodness, covered everything on the Ayton saga?
No, this was fun. I'll just lastly say I think it's hilarious if Jalen Smith gets in the way of all of this. It would just be poetic justice. I don't even know in what direction it would be poetic justice or what it would really be telling us about the Galaxy, but it would be saying something, and it would be hilarious to me.
What it's telling me is Devin Booker's next team will be Indiana. That's what I'm hearing.
Oh, okay. Sure. Yeah.
Had to sneak it in at the end. Everybody, whatever show you're descending on us from, thank you a ton for listening. As soon as anything happens in this saga, of course, both of our shows will be covering it. But in the meantime, on the Pacers side, I think I've covered every angle possible. So I'm going to be continuing to talk about Summer League and other moves outside of Ayton for the foreseeable future. What you got coming on Locked On Suns, Brendan?
Just charting the course of all of these tea leaves. I've gotten really good. I have a microscope. I have a bunch of magnifying glasses. There's just tea strewn everywhere. There's boiling water on all four pots of my stove. And it's just a matter of figuring out what they all mean at this point. So
my goodness,
follow along for, I'm Charlie Day in the gift that everybody throws out there. It's just, it's our never ending circus here in Phoenix, but it should be solved soon. So yes, tune in.
I've been getting into chess recently, and so instead of paying attention to stuff, I just play chess now. So you can read the tea leaves for me. I'll be stalemating 700 rank computer players because I just learned how to play, and I'm terrible at chess. Everybody, thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Till then, have a good one.